The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
For certain, maybe you're still here. I feel you all around me, your memory so clear. Deep in the stillness, I can hear you speak. You're still an inspiration. Can it be that you are mine forever, love, and you are watching over me from up above? Fly me up to where you are beyond the distant stars.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here today at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you who are on Zoom, thanks to the magic of the internet and our wonderful tech team, we are also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world with kindness. I'm Preston Lutweiler, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whoever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. And now, Linda Weaver will light the chalice while I read words from Julia Corbett Heemeyer. We light this chalice in celebration of joy, the flickering flame of a candle, a flame that shimmers, that dances, that cheers, the flame that heartens and encourages us in hard times, the welcoming flame of this community. And now, Linda will light the peace lamp, if you'll repeat with the words on the screen, may peace be with us, and with all the people of the world. Now we're going to have a gathering song, When I See You Again, by Carrie Underwood.
Oh, see you again. Oh, this is not where it ends. I will carry you with me. Yeah, yeah. I will see you again. Oh, this is not where it ends. I will carry you with me. Oh, till I see you again. Oh, 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 turned around and you were gone, gone, gone.
Okay. So, my name is Linda Weaver. I'm the vice president here. And in case you haven't heard us start every service like this, today's service is going to be a little different. And I'm sure you hear that at the beginning of every one of our services, because amazingly enough, they're all different. So today we're going to talk about the joy of remembrance. And I'm going to get through this whole service without crying, because this is about joy. So I was thinking about this theme, and by the way, this is our Soul Matters theme for the month of April, is joy. And I was thinking about how can there be joy after death? And then I realized that absolutely, that is what happens. I know initially when I've experienced loss of my parents, there's that soul-sucking sorrow that seems to consume you. But then you do get through that and you come to the other side and you remember the joyful times. So that's basically where we're going to be focusing today, the joy of remembering those who are no longer with us. So, remembering our loved ones who have passed, particularly those cherished members of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, brings a profound sense of joy, but also a sense of connection. Their spirits live on in the stories we share, the lessons they imparted, and the love that continues to bind us as a community. Emerging from grief is a deeply personal journey that often brings with it cherishing the memories of those who've passed. By allowing ourselves to reminisce about joyful moments and shared laughter, we can transform our own sorrow into a celebration of life. We can find joy by engaging in activities that honor their legacy, such as creating a special space for reflection. And in the past, we've done that here at Thomas Paine. We've had special spaces created first, I think initially first by Peter Hoos many, many years ago. And then Anne Rostosky's son, who now is a grown-up and has a son of his own, created a space. And then most recently, we had the memorial trail or the memorial circle created by Matt Sayre for his Eagle Scout project with lots of help from his mom, Gail Sayre, and John Sayre, his dad. I'm gonna share some of those slides with you. And then when the weather permits, when it's a little nicer, we'd encourage all of you to take a moment of reflection going out the side doors to our memorial trail. I know that Preston and I go there frequently. We do reflect, but also our dachshund likes to walk around there and sniff the flowers and do all that sort of stuff. So it really is a very tranquil place. So we were a very small fellowship to begin with prior to COVID. Back in 2021 or 2020, we had 63 folks. And then COVID hit, and prior to the vaccines that saved so many lives, And hear me when I say that loud and clear. Vaccines save lives. So, and that really was not a political statement. That was a health statement for anyone who wonders. So we lost 6 people prior to the vaccines to COVID, to death. And so Matt's project was in remembrance of the folks that we did lose during COVID. So as we gather today in remembrance, we're going to celebrate their lives and the impact they held on each one of us. After we view some slides, we were going to ask individuals in the audience if they'd like to share a brief reflection about any of the individuals. Each reflection becomes a tribute, a beacon of hope that reminds us to carry their legacies forward, enriching our fellowship with the values they held dear. Through shared laughter, heartfelt stories, and a collective commitment to honor their memories, we find strength and solace in the enduring bond of love that transcends time and space. So with no further ado, John, if you would start the slideshow, I'd appreciate that. And John, if you want to narrate this part about Matt, I mean, I'd be happy to cede the podium to you. What do you want to do?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
So our son Matthew decided to do a project for his Eagle Scout project here at Thomas Paine, and we had looked in the back, and the back area had been, you could tell that there had been a trail back there, and there was a bridge to a sitting area, but it had somewhat fallen into disrepair, and we had been using it as a place to pile all the leaves every year we did the a cleanup on the grounds. So it needed some work. So he had the idea to reinvigorate the existing part of the trail, which essentially was a big circle out in the middle of the woods with a trail leading up to it. And then he had the idea to extend that and build another further loop out into the woods. So he gathered all the materials and brought a bunch of his friends over from scout troop and from school. And they started out with it you know, just a raw thing. They marked it all out and cleaned everything out of here, dug up a ton of roots. It was amazing just how thick some of those roots and deep that some of those were. We had a group from here out, I think Preston and a number of other folks from here came out to help out as well. And we had a lot of tools out there working on that. So a few of these, some of the work actually digging out the trail and rebuilding it, laying down various plastic, adding the mulch into there. And then my part, and Gail and my part of the project, was to build 2 benches. And if you remember, during COVID, lumber was not easy to find. So the 2 benches that we built back there, I'm pretty sure are the most expensive benches in Montgomery County. But finding cedar wood was a challenge on that. But we were able to do that. We built 2 benches back there to go along with the existing bench that was already there. And we're able to place all of that back there and mulch and rock line the trail. And we ended it up with a memorial plaque just in remembrance of those TPUF members and friends who passed during the COVID things. We lost a number of them to COVID. We also lost a few others along the way as well, not necessarily from COVID, but during the time of the pandemic while we were in lockdown as well.
Thanks, John. And just for everyone else's information, I just kind of sprang that on John. I didn't even ask him ahead of time, because that's how I operate, isn't it, Preston? Okay, so now we're going to look at some of the slides of the folks who've passed. First person is Sally Bertolazzi. Joe Snyder. Jean Holt. David Partington. Jack, we called him Jack Hurley. Adele McDaniel. Roswell, and it was pronounced Roslyn. Don't ever say Roslyn. Tina Spoontz. Michael Strauss. Sandy Beckius. And Dr. Jonathan Black. So at this time, once again, I'd like to cede the microphone to anyone who'd like to come up and share some reflections on any of those individuals. And I see Tony Black. And this was prearranged, just so you know. I asked Tony if she would say a few words about Dr. Black.
Is this on? To people here, he was not Dr. Black. He was just Jonathan Black. The doctorate was a PhD. He and I had connected with UUism when we were away from home and away from friends and looking for connections down in Clemson, South Carolina. When we returned, when we escaped from the South, we looked again for a UU home. We lived midway between this congregation, which at that time was meeting in the unused Audubon School. It was unused by the district. They didn't pay much attention to it. The furnace didn't always work, and fortunately, Peter Hoos was good with things like that and kept us working. Midway between that and the mainline Unitarian Church with its 750 members, just moved back into the mansion that was home, and we thought about where to connect. And it seemed to us at that time, and we're talking early 1990s, that anything we could contribute would make more difference to this congregation, which was just beginning to plan to build this building, than it would make in the huge mainline congregation. And we had quite a time. There are lots of stories to tell about the period when we were building here, and I'm not the only one who can share those stories. I will tell you that that space where the wall joins the ceiling is very high up, and painting up there was a challenge. I would only do it when there were no crowds here, because it was just too high. Anyway, those years were, once the building was built, we were open here, we were doing outreach, were a period of tremendous growth for this congregation. And at one point I was doing a little analysis and realized that we had reached a point where roughly two-thirds of the membership had been members for less than a year. That is to say, most people were new. And they weren't just new to this congregation, they were new to Unitarian Universalism. And one of the things that that meant was that there was a lot of teaching and learning to be done. And Jonathan, being a true academic, first had studied, he began that in Clemson, and then he taught. And the photograph of him at a podium, he didn't usually here wear a shirt and jacket and tie, but it was Jonathan teaching, professing. Professors profess wherever they are, whenever they have an opportunity. I know that from experience with more than one professor. The things he taught here included, he taught primarily adults, the new members, the new community. Some of the curricula are down in our library downstairs now, as is the library that he built about Unitarian Universalism and some of the key figures. as he was doing his own study. There was a series of classes on the literature of Unitarian Universalism, which included people, adults actually did homework for those classes. They read Emerson, they read Channing, they read Ballou, and then got together and talked about it. It was a very rich experience for us. Jonathan also preached, but he was not the only one, and we were fortunate at that time to also have Don Carter as a member of the congregation, who had become a real student of the history of Unitarian, but he focused a great deal on the Universalists, about whom it was harder to find out as much. And both of them would give services that included history and philosophy that as it changed over time in the denomination. There was a series, for instance, of sermons that Jonathan did on earth, fire, and water, which wasn't, it wasn't literary, it was cultural, it was, yes. Those who are still active, who remember, will remember and can share stories. A lot of Jonathan's sermons are captured in an online platform, and I can give anybody who cares a reference to that. Jonathan never came and dug and planted with us, but he came to our grounds work parties, which were a big community building experience. Jonathan would bring soup, and Marian Augustine would bring bread. So when we reached the point of absolute fatigue, we would come into the kitchen for soup and bread and communion, as it were. I remember an occasion when Jonathan was giving a service, and one of the children in the back of the room, whose family had helped at work parties, grounds work parties, the youngster stood up, pointed to the podium, said, "It's Soup Man." So it was not at all an intellectual thing. It was also other contributions. There are those who still remember Jonathan. Those of you who haven't met him, did not experience him, maybe visiting the library of the books he collected, or looking at some of the RE curricula he wrote, can share some of that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Is there anyone else who would like to share any remembrances? Teresa?
I would like to remember Adele McDaniels. I don't know if many here remember her, but she was a wonderful woman. She used to host the most wonderful dinners, and she was a personality that you just couldn't put down. And she was so generous. My mother, after she died, we would always say a cardinal would come and it would be my mom. So I was down at one of her dinners at her house in Norristown one time, which was gorgeous. And she gave me this glass that had a cardinal on it. So that is now on my windowsill in my kitchen. So every time I see it, I think of Adele and my mom. So she was a wonderful person. I miss her.
Thanks, Teresa. I was at one of those famous dinners, and I remember we were sitting there, and well, this family comes in through the door and walks through the house and goes upstairs, and you know, conversation just continued, and I'm like, okay, people just walked in this door and went upstairs. What's going on? They explained to me, well, you know, they lived there because they didn't have any place to live, and Adele opened her home. She had a huge home in Norristown, big stately house, and opened up her home to people that were in need. That's the kind of person Adele was. Ken, did I see your hand up? Come on up.
I may be getting some facts wrong because I'm getting this through two or three different people, but in the 1990s, I sort of wandered into Thomas Paine because I didn't have anything better to do. And Roz was then working at Norristown State Hospital, and she brought one of her patients, one of her patients who would eventually become my wife, Jan, to this congregation, and this is where the two of us met. So wow. Roz had a big, big influence on at least two lives.
Wow. Ken, that's an amazing story and one that I had not heard. I like new stories. Flo, come on up.
Hi, I would like to also remember Roz. She was an interesting character and a fascinating woman in many ways. She did a lot of work with the organization NAMI, and her dedication to mental wellness came from having to deal with her mother, who had mental wellness issues. But one of the things that I also remember about her, in addition to her legacy, was that she was an avid reader. And one day after the service, she came up to me and she said, "Flo, I read your book." And I'm like, "What book?" And apparently somehow she got a hold of an anthology from the Women's Writing Circle that I'm part of. And she read the story of the Native American Taino vision quest that I did in my early 20s. It was a memoir. And she really paid attention to the detail, was fascinated with what with the experience that I had. And you know, I was impressed with how she was willing to open her mind to so many different things. The second thing I remember about her was when we would all go to lunch at Franco's, yes, and she would reach over with her spoon to get some of my ice from my water glass. And of course I didn't mind her borrowing the ice, but the first time I was a little bit off, but it's like, what is going on? But it became a ritual. She sat next to me, and she, when her drink was a little bit too cold or too hot, she would reach over and just take a little ice. And so that's what I remember.
Just to piggyback, I had a story about Roz too.
Ooh.
During COVID, she really missed coming to service, and she was a resident at St. Mary's. And so, you know, I had this brilliant idea. I'm going to give her one of my iPads, and then she'll be able to join via Zoom with the iPad. I can say without a doubt that the nurses and the folks at St. Mary's came to hate me because, you know, I did teach her how to use it. I taught her how to use it every week, but then she would call the people in from St. Mary's and require help. And I know I probably made them lose their religion. Anne?
For a very long time, so I know all of these people. I don't want to talk forever, but just a few things. With Jonathan, I was one of the students in his Transcendentalist class, and actually at our Mystics group last week, kind of a tribute to him, I guess. We talked about the Transcendentalists, so that was good. And with Roz, my husband and I chuckle every Sunday when 60 Minutes comes on, because when Roz was in St. Mary's, she would always call me up and she would say, "Ann, I'm not getting 60 Minutes." And inevitably there was like a sporting event that ran long, so I could tell her that. But we still, when it comes on, we're like, "Oh, Roz is gonna call." And so many of the other people, Joe Schneider, he did so much when we were at the Audubon School. He was like, "Phil is here," you know, doing everything around the building and stuff. And then Sandy Beckius, she was an amazing friend. We did so many things together. I could probably say something about everybody. I forget who else on the list. But thank you for doing this. It's nice to remember everyone.
I'll get a plug in for Joe Schneider. I sat next to him one time, and I mean, I'm old, but Joe was a lot older. And I looked over at him, I said, you know, you have a beautiful singing voice. He said, well, yeah, I'm not bad for an old guy. So he had a good sense of humor. Susan?
I'm one of the newer members, so I have some memories of some of these people. But I want to segue with Roz. One thing she would say every Sunday on Zoom, can you hear my hand?
The other thing with Roz during Zoom services, if you looked over there on the screen, you got a really good view of the St. Mary's ceiling because she always had facing up there. And I'm going to say one thing about Sandy Beckius, Sandy, who was my best friend here. Her loss hit me hard, really hard. The one thing that we shared was our love of Preston. She loved Preston. The first time I came here, I said, yeah, that woman's eyeing up Preston. I saw that. And we used to laugh about that because she'd say, you know, if Preston was a little older, you know, he'd be my type. So we did share that love of Preston. She was coming to our house one time, my favorite Sandy story, and she's late. You know, she's going to come over for lunch with us or something. We're going to go somewhere with her. You know, Sandy, you know, why are you so late? She goes, well, the police were following me and I had to avoid them. She drove down Ridge Pike like a maniac trying to hide from the police because she thought her taillight was out or some unknown reason. That was Sandy.
Okay. I have a lot to say about all of them, but I'll try to just keep everything really short. Jonathan Black did teach one class, children's class. It was Zachary, my son, and Ann's son. And when he came out of the class, I said, Jonathan, how did it go? And he replied, I'm going to pray for granddaughters. One of the courses that he taught was The Nature of Evil. And I said to him, oh, Jonathan, I read a couple of the books on your list. He says, you're going to join my class. I think, oh, my, I got to get up early on a Sunday morning. And so, of course, I come in late. And then he gives me a lecture about, you're good. Come in. I want you on time. So then I'm dragging on time. But and there's some other stories with that one. But Jonathan, I was always sort of searching, you know, what is this UU stuff? Is it really a religion, whatever? Just, and he said, well, and he'd keep pushing me and ask me questions. And he says, what is it that you believe so fervently that you would die for? A good question. He was always asking questions, get me thinking, and help me along my own journey. Talking about kids, Joe Schneider, we were at Audubon one time, and I saw my oldest daughter come in, and she goes to Joe, and they leave. Later, I asked, well, what happened? And Jesse, my daughter, said, well, Zachary and Lee were throwing things out the windows. Roland was teaching at the time. And so I asked Joe for some help, and he came in and put it all in order, put the kids together. They knew the rules, or he made the rules, and they listened. Sally, she was great. I could speak Italian with her. She's just wonderful. Adele, we did this women's service during COVID. She came to my house. She said, there's something, my computer is reversed, it's black and white, and I need your help in fixing it. I'm thinking, God, I don't know computers that well, but the way she said it was like, I better figure it out. And I did, and it was just this way that she had of sort of infusing this trust that you're going to be able to do something that you're not too sure that you could do. I think, who did I cover? Jean Holt. What? It was quite, she had a personality that was quite strong that didn't always go over so well, but by the end, it was like I was going to her and said, Jean, I have this problem. And she would just say, well, maybe you're appearing too energetic. And people don't want, people who come in who are too energetic, they want you to sort of fit in. So I think I can't remember who else is on that list, but
Roz.
I remember she wanted to babysit my children, and I was terrified that she wouldn't be able to handle them. And when I look back, I think she would have been able to. But the other thing that really impressed upon me is sometimes some people didn't think she was always quite with it, but she was really with it. A friend of mine had I had one of these parties. I used to invite everybody. And she was there, and a friend of mine whose son had schizophrenia said, "That's Roz, we've been taking her classes." I said, "Well, come on over." And she asked, "Well, how's Greg doing?" And my friend said, "Well, he's did such and such and such." And Roz looked, she says, "I don't think that's the schizophrenia, I think that's adolescence." It was like the ability to separate what was the illness and what was something else. That was just, I think I covered everybody. Oh my gosh, how could I ever forget Tina? Tina, during COVID, and she's going out, she was an extrovert, and she didn't want to be confined, and she just terrified me. And she just said, "I just don't intend to get COVID. I'm not getting COVID." And oh my, Tina, please, please. And she did not get COVID. Tina was a force of nature. She was very, very independent, and nobody was ever going to tell her what she was going to do. And in fact, if you wanted her to do something, just never ask her to do it. If she wanted to do it, she will do something. And when she did, she was very, very giving. She was very loving. I always had her over during the holidays, or especially toward the end, the earlier years, she would have us. And I'd say, "Don't bring anything." And she'd bring half the meal. So Tina still lives with me. I can't drive anywhere without thinking about swimming with her, or just Tina will always be with me.
Thank you. Phil, come on up. You've been waiting patiently. I saw you get up a while ago.
I'm not going to talk like that.
Okay.
I just have a few. I wish I paid more attention to what was going on around here and what the next programs could be, because I have a lot of memories. And I sat back there, and just a few of them came to mind, and unfortunately, I won't remember a lot of them, but I made cheat sheets, so maybe I could get through this a little bit. I remember Jack. Mostly, I remember Jack's dog that I hated. Jack would bring his dog to every community event we have, and he was so unbehaved. And I said, "I would just hope Jack wouldn't bring it the next time," but he always did, and that's okay. Dave Partington. Macaroni and cheese. Adele McDaniel put the fellowship in the fellowship dinners. I was at many, many of them, and her table just kept getting longer and longer, which was really nice. I think Roz would really be happy to know how much how much she was remembered today. It's kind of funny listening to all those things about her, but she just loved this place, and she just wanted to be here all the time. And I'm happy to say that she's never going to leave. And let's see, I guess that's about it, except for Margaret Hughes, who's a potter and is responsible for our chalice. And I think that's about it. That's all the people I can remember and what I remember about them.
One thing I remember about Roz is, for those of you who knew Roz, she had a walker, one of this kind. And in the front, she had a pouch, okay? And so I was trying, it was like a basket. I was trying to be helpful because I saw a lot of debris in there. So I was going to clean it up for her. I just leaned over. She goes, "Don't touch that. That's my lunch." She used to put cookies and all sorts of things and wheel it back to St. Mary's, and that was going to be her lunch. So, yeah, I was going to be very helpful and clean it out. Tony?
I guess I have to use microphone.
Yeah, they won't hear you on Zoom. And then I am going to finish up with one story about Gene Holt.
There's probably a lot that could be said about Gene Holt, but we won't go into all that now. But about Roz, before she was disabled and before she was at St. Mary's, I was one of the people, and I think for a while you did too, who worked with Roz and her house. You saw the debris in a basket. The whole house was full of debris. Somewhere in there was the deed. Can we find the deed? We gave up. Every week I would spend part of the week with Roz. And we would go through once. She wanted the house presentable enough she could entertain again. And we would go through and I would say, "You probably don't need these. Oh, I'm saving that for Sam. I'm saving that for somebody." The car was also full of things she was taking to other people. It was amazing.
I was looking at the list and there's a few people we didn't talk about, so I just wanted to say something. Well, first, Sally Bertolazzi and Tina were both wonderful artists. And Sally did a lot of pet portraits for people in the fellowship. And Tina's work is everywhere. She used to give it to people when they gave her rides and everything. Michael Strauss, a lot of you may not know him, but he was a wonderful musician. He played the violin, he gave music lessons, and he often played for us here, and he was wonderful. And I think that's everyone. I just wanted to add a few things.
I'm going to close with a story about Gene Holt. I only had the occasion to meet Gene Holt one time. She lived at Shenandoah. She bought one of the largest end units and then the unit next to it and then combined them. And at this point, she was in her 90s, right, Preston? And they were very instrumental. Her husband was an attorney. He was the gentleman who bought the movie lots or did the research to find the movie lots. This fellowship is built on a combination of movie lots. And what was that was in Philadelphia, when you went to the movie theater, they would raffle off a piece of property in this wild, uncivilized area called, you know, Lower Providence. And so there were hundreds of these little tiny postage size pieces of property. And of course people, they'd win it, and it, like, they didn't pay taxes on it or anything, so it would go into default. And so what he did the research, and he found 5.5 acres, right? 5.5 acres, put it all together, sometimes had to pay the taxes that were due on it. And that's how we got the property to build this fellowship. And then he and his wife were instrumental in building this fellowship. So before I met Gene Holt, I had heard, you know, stories, people talk, and they were nice stories, but they always had this little, you know, she was, bottom line, she was bossy. And I can so relate to that, can I, Preston? I can. I like to find solutions and then share them with anyone who will listen, including my husband. So Jean was one of those kind of people, so I could really feel her. But here's the part of Gene Holt that you need to hear. When we went to her, when we had a lot of needs, financial needs in this fellowship, Preston, I think you were the treasurer and I was the president. And Sandy Beckius lived at Shenandoah and was friends with Gene and got us an audience with Gene.
And, you know, we made our case. We said, Gene, you know, we would appreciate it if you could contribute to our capital fund. That spry little woman got down on her hands and knees, brought out a photo album, you know, jumped up, went into the other room, said, I'll be right back, and came back with a check for $25,000. That was Jean Holt. She was bossy and directive and generous to a fault. She was a smart, active woman here at the fellowship, and we owe a lot to her. So I will say that about Jean Holt. And with that, I think we can bring this part of the service to a close. What do you think, John? Shall we move on to matters of the heart? It's up there. Cindy.
Good morning, everyone. What a great service.
Good morning, Cindy.
Really appreciated that service and that history. So much contribution and legacy. The interesting thing to me was how many people you lost that I started coming in 2023 and how many people we lost in just a matter of a few years. But their legacy lives on. And some of the topics were independent, learned, professors, reading, and the contributions additionally were music and food and fellowship. So today, I'm Cindy Westfall. I'm on the CARE team. And we come together from multitudes of our lives and memories, and we bring ourselves with ourselves the pain, the joy, the laughter, and tears in our hearts. It is right and it is holy to bring our entire selves into this place. If you have highs or lows which you feel moved to share, I invite you to come forward and share. If online, like I am today, you may raise your physical or virtual hand or type in the chat. And please start with your name. Thank you.
So at this time, we'll bring this time of sharing to a close. We'll be singing Spirit of Life. The lyrics are up on screen, and they will also show up in the video we were about to play.
All right, Linda will extinguish the chalice while I read words from Reverend Joe Cherry. Joy is hard. Joy requires us to feel safe enough, to be safe enough, to open to vulnerability. To feel joy, you must be brave. Joy walks into a room after the space has been cleared, cleared of shame, cleared of doubt, cleared of self-recrimination. Joy is hard. Joy is hard. And joy is worth the hard work of preparation, preparing oneself and setting down all of the defenses, all the shoulds and could-haves, all the should-not-haves and might-haves. Joy is worth the work. You are worth the work. You can start small, the simple pleasure of your favorite tea, the grand freedom of a full belly laugh. Invite joy to be your companion.
Thank you. Now, Preston will go pick up the pizza, right?
Yes, you're going to.
I need this.
You're going to do announcements.
I'm going to do announcements.